Our next guest, John Derbyshire, says that comforting but fundamentally idiotic notions of political correctness and wishful thinking have taken root beyond the kumbaya singing, "We are all one" crowd. These ideas, he says, have now infected conservatives, the very people who should know better. His sober assessment is that the US Republican Party has been derailed by legions of fools and posers wearing smiley face masks. I spoke to John last week and asked him to explain what it is that the US conservatives have done wrong.
What they've done wrong is they've signed up to optimism. They have signed up to a particular brand of cockeyed optimism which properly belongs with the political left. Conservatives shouldn't go near this stuff. They shouldn't touch it with a barge pole. But they have. And so we have these grand world-saving projects. We have these nation-building projects. We have projects to transform our citizens by education. We have projects to save the world by environmental measures. We have all this sunny, smiley face, yes, we can, infecting the conservative movement, which, as I've always seen it, ought to be the thin-lipped, green-eye-shade, skeptical side of the political spectrum.
Well, that brings us to the subtitle of your book, which is Reclaiming Conservative Pessimism. But that needs an explication, because a pessimistic outlook doesn't imply a melancholy temperament, does it?
No, that's one of the points I tried to make. Pessimism is for everybody. We can all be pessimistic, even if we're not gifted with a melancholy temperament. And I give some examples. Matthew Arnold, the poet, who wrote those fine, gloomy lines in Dover Beach, and yet who in person was a very happy and well-adjusted individual, good husband and father, liked sport and good food and so on. Likewise, Ronald Reagan, another naturally sunny person, but with some profoundly pessimistic outlooks on life.
Yes, referring to Arnold, Matthew Arnold, you proclaim, pessimism is bracing, like cold weather. But we Aussies might reply that a sunburnt country can temper infantilism as well.
I think it's probably harder for you guys. You are, as I remember, you are the nation with an empty heart, aren't you?
That has been said many times, yes. The dead centre. The dead centre.
Yeah. I don't know. The workings of climate on human nature is a large and mysterious subject, which we probably don't have time to cover in any depth. But I do think it helps a bit to have been brought up in England, especially in the rather glum, half-starved, smoky England of the mid-20th century, as I was. I think that helps.
Well, continuing on that theme about environment and geography and so on, you say this: if you want to get a handle on human nature, talk to people who know nature. Now, your point there is, it's pretty rough out there in the wild, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. I came quite late to this myself. I had a mathematical education, mathematics and the exact sciences. I didn't have much contact with biology or the human sciences until well into middle age. And then I fell in with a group here in America, a group of academics and writers and so on who tossed these ideas around and started to learn something about nature and biology and genetics and all that good stuff. And boy, yeah, red in tooth and claw, no doubt about it. To understand human nature, as I said, and as you correctly quoted me, you have to start from nature herself. It doesn't end there, but you do have to start there, and you have to ground yourself in nature, which is a battlefield, unfortunately.
I want to examine George W. Bush, and for Australian listeners, it's important to stress that in America, conservative is not synonymous with gung-ho Republican voter, is it?
No, not by any means, unfortunately. The Republican Party has, over the last couple of decades, presented a pretty sorry spectacle to conservatives. They did give us Ronald Reagan, thank goodness for that. But then, what did they give us? George Herbert Walker Bush, a WASP ethnomasochist, Bob Dole, just a Senate seat warmer, and then George W. Bush, the very epitome of the kind of wrong-headed optimism that I've been talking about, and then John McCain, another Senate seat warmer, advanced in years. It just hasn't been very inspiring this past couple of decades. So, the Republican Party, I think most conservatives have issues with the Republican Party here.
Well, now, George W. Bush, he played with that idea or that phrase, compassionate conservatism, but you state every organised society needs the backbone of cold realism. Now, do Republicans post-Bush agree with you?
Well, they talk a good game. You know, they say, we're the daddy party and the other people are the mommy party. You know, we're the stern-faced disciplinarians and the other ones are the healers and the therapists. But in fact, the healing and therapy and kumbaya business has infected Republicans too. It's all over the place. One of the landmark acts of Congress under the George W. Bush administration was No Child Left Behind. No Child Left Behind. Well, you know, it's the nature of education that in any given area, some children will be left behind. We can't all do everything. You learn in kindergarten. You learn that, you know, some kids are brighter than others. And there's not a whole lot you can do about it. But, you know, we've all got little talents we can develop, and education ought to find out what a child's talents are and try to help the child develop them. They might not be bookish. They might be athletic or musical or something quite different. But that's what education should be. But we've got into this rut where everybody has to go to college, everybody has to hit the books, everybody has to be bookish, and if you're not bookish, you're cast into outer darkness. Well, not every kid is bookish.
Staying with George W. Bush and denying reality, you label him as a liberal interventionist, which raises the question, which is relevant today more than ever, is democracy easily exportable?
I'm really pessimistic here. I kind of wonder if outside Europe and the European settler nations, you don't actually see much in the way of really good quality, rational government. Oh, boy. What is it in my chapter on foreign countries, I point out that of the 150-something nations that were around in 1911, only about half a dozen made it through the following 100 years.
Yes,
without some sort of constitutional political breakdown or civil war or revolution. Only about half a dozen. And what are they? They're like, you know, Australia, New Zealand, the United States, Canada, I think, what is it, Sweden and Switzerland. I think that was about it, wasn't it? That kind of tells you something. I'm not sure what, but something not very good about the possibilities for democracy.
Well, of course, President Obama is facing this dilemma right now. Afghanistan, democracy, question mark, discuss.
Yeah, I'd like him to read or perhaps just watch the movie. There's a very good movie of it, Kipling's story, The Man Who Would Be King, about the possibilities for getting any kind of well-organized society going in a place like that. But to be fair to Obama, he seems to be, people are criticizing him for taking so long to decide what to do about Afghanistan, but he seems to be at least open to the idea that what we thought we could do there can't be done. We can't bring them up to Jeffersonian democracy. They may be able to do it for themselves, but we're not going to be able to do it for them because we're just too much resented as outsiders. He does seem to be open to that, I think.
There may be a possibility there for a bit of old-fashioned realism.
Oh, please, yes, I do hope so. It will raise my opinion of Obama 500% if he does take that route.
Well, speaking of raising your opinion, sir, let's go to what we in the colonies called the old dart, the UK. David Cameron's British Tories, do you see any signs of sensible pessimism there, or is he a kumbaya happy face?
Yeah, he He's a happy face. Yeah, or at least, well, you know, in politics, you pretty much have to be a happy face. I go back to Reagan again. One problem with my prescriptions and my outlook is that it's a really hard sell in the political marketplace. Pessimism isn't really a good thing to sell. So the politician, even if in his heart he knows these truths about the world and about humanity, he's got to present a smiling face to the electorate. Reagan was terrific at that.
Well, he had that wonderful phrase, it's morning in America.
Yeah, yeah, he had these lofty phrases which didn't require him to act on them, but they gave people a nice warm feeling, and he smiled a lot, and he cracked a lot of good jokes. And yet, it's something like the Lebanon, you know, when they blew up the barracks in Lebanon, he didn't send an army in there to turn them into a democracy. He knew that couldn't be done. So in his heart, in the essentials, I claim him for pessimism. He was a pessimist in the essentials about what could be done, about what the possibilities are. But he did it with a smiley face, and that's the only way you're ever going to be able to sell this kind of thing. There's a slender hope that Cameron might be that way inclined. I don't know.
John, let's look at what you call girls, men, and girly men. And you tell us, and I'm quoting, Clark Gable was unapologetically and unambiguously a man. What then say you about Tom Cruise, Brad Pitt, and Matt Damon?
Boys, boyishness. They're boyish, and they're playing boys' games. They're playing cops and robbers' games. And that seems to be what girls like now. They like the smooth-skinned, hairless, androgynous male, rather than the more traditional husky type. It seems to be travelling with the increasing egalitarianism of our society, the breaking down of the old sex roles.
Well, then Leonardo DiCaprio would be the man for the age.
Yeah, I'm afraid so. I don't know that this is going to work out well. I suggest in my chapter on sex that the women might end up killing, cooking, and eating us. It probably won't come to that, but certainly women seem to be doing much better than men in the world now. As we're going through this recession in the United States, I don't know how it is down there, But far more men than women are losing their jobs because women tend to work in things like healthcare, you know, and government, where you're not so much at risk of losing your job as men are.
Yes, John, towards the end of your book, you say, I keep saying to my kids, my teenage kids, get a government job, get a government job. It's the
yeah.
How do they respond to your exhortations?
Oh, Dad. You know, anything you say to your kids, well, my kids are in their teens now, well into their teens. They're 14 and 16, so they respond to pretty much everything I say to them with that. But, poor old capitalism really seems to be taking a hit here in the United States. This healthcare plan that the Obama administration is pushing through is going to raise big new taxes on private businesses. It's going to become harder and harder to run a business. And they're already hedged about with so many liabilities, so much, you know, diversity cops and tax collectors. I feel really sorry for businessmen here. I don't think that capitalism's going to thrive in the future. I think probably you're safer with a government job, especially if this healthcare thing goes through. Private healthcare. I pay about $1,000 a month for my healthcare because I'm just a private individual for healthcare for myself and my family. And that's going to go way up. And the people who are going to be smiling will be the government workers who have these well-funded government plans.
And thus you say what we need is proper bracing pessimism, your phrase. And when you discuss that, you compare and contrast the TV series Happy Days with Samuel Beckett's Happy Days. What can a close study of Samuel Beckett give us?
I think it gives us... I feel when I'm at a Beckett play or when I'm reading one of his little fictional pieces, I actually do a reading of one of them on my website, Imagination Dead Imagine. I feel I'm looking at what human life is really like. A bit of a mess on the whole, not much governed by reason. How rarely reason guides the stubborn choice, rules the bold hand, or prompts the suppliant voice. Liable to all sorts of mishaps. And yet human beings are invested with this this will to go on. One of Beckett's characters says, "I can't go on, I'll go on." And that's what most of us manage to do most of the time. But it's always a struggle. It's always a weary struggle.
Yes, yeah. you quote Winnie from Happy Days, where she says, "One does it all we can. 'Tis only human nature."
Yeah, there's the life force just keeps pushing us forward through the mud, and the wise man just allows himself to be pushed and not to ponder it too much.
Well, in terms of not pondering too much, when we last spoke, which was early this year, you told us the title of the book was going to be "We Are Doomed, comma, Doomed." Now, you lost a doom somewhere between writing and publication. So is the future now not so bleak, or is that just a start?
No, my publisher said that was too many dooms. Yeah, I had a little fight with them over that. They said, no, that's just too many dooms, Derbyshire. It's going to turn people off.
Now, listen, towards the end of your book, you don't offer a grand, sweeping ideological spray, but you say this: find happiness in small pastimes and the company of friends. That's not a gloomy place to be, is it?
No, it's not. And the pessimism that I'm urging on American conservatives is a pessimism largely towards the things of politics. It's a pessimism towards what we can expect to accomplish through politics and through public action. In private action, there's many, many opportunities for happiness and profitable, rewarding activity, but not much in the public sphere, I'm afraid. And by investing too many hopes in what politicians and governments can do, we have gone down the primrose path to our doom. But private life is still there to be enjoyed, yes.
John Derbyshire, on that note, I'll say thank you very much for sharing conservative pessimism with our listeners. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
John Derbyshire. His recent book, We Are Doomed, Reclaiming Conservative Pessimism, is published by Crown Forum.
And now to the Olympic Games. Do they really make ordinary Australians want to take up sporting activity? That's coming up next on Counterpoint.
Tonight on Life Matters, have you heard of Nana Sheik? Singer Sarah Blasco's the poster girl for this form of vintage revival, and she's the patron of a community project called Biddy Bags. Founder Samantha Jockle couldn't believe it when she agreed.
Samantha, living in Redcliffe, you know, no one really knows where I am. What I was trying to do was having coffee with Sarah Blasco. It was quite exciting.
Tonight from 9, here on ABC Radio National.